And there you are. How you doing? Are you well? It's Thursday afternoon, the 9th of July, 2020, and this is a little bit unusual. I hope the sound is okay. I've not got a very good microphone to connect to the laptop, so I'm just using the laptop's own microphone. So we'll soldier on as best as we can. We'll improvise, adapt and overcome, as the saying goes. You all right? So, the reason I'm doing this today and not the radio show is because I've basically been abandoned. I've been left alone with two canine chums. One of them was very young. The oft-mentioned future missus is in town having her hair done, but she also had a medical thing to do before that. She's been gone all day. I won't be back, she said, till around about 7 o'clock this evening. And I could be even later. And I got a text from her about 45 minutes ago saying, I might make it back by 4:30. Yeah. Anyway, are you well, Yar? You in good form? There are a lot of chat things going on there. You can chat amongst yourselves there on the right-hand side of the page. I'll mention one or two as we go along. And it's good to be doing one of these again. Somebody mentioned to me, actually, this morning. They said, oh, what a hypocritical arse you are, Richie. Because last night on the radio show, I maintained, and I meant it, that I don't like Google or YouTube. And I won't be disappointed when the channel, this channel, eventually is deleted. I think it will be, because about 4 or 5 videos have been deleted in the last few weeks. I won't complain when it happens. I have no time for this platform. No time whatsoever, right? I don't. And I won't be complaining when this is gone. But it was useful today. Right. Useful today. Do you want to hear a very bad gag before we get to the news? A really bad gag. A really bad gag. Right. So a woman has twins then and gives them up for adoption. Times are hard. One of them goes to a family in Egypt and is named Amal. The other one is sent to Spain, to the Costa del Sol, and is called Juan. Years later, Juan wants to find his mommy, so sends a picture of himself to his mom. When she gets it, she tells her husband that she wishes she also had a picture of Amal. The husband says, they're twins. When you've seen Juan, you've seen Amal. Marvellous. It's garbage. Right. Before I forget to mention it, Hayden Hewitt will be live at 10 o'clock tonight with a trigger warning big show with Graham Booth on this thing, youtube.com/triggerwarningTV. Right? If you want to check them out a bit later on. Do you like that, by the way? Do you like me t-shirt, do you? With me big conspiratorial bald head on me. All right. A few interesting stories before we laugh at a few things. A few things to laugh at today. Marvellous. When you've seen Juan, you've seen them all. No career in stand-up waiting for me, I tell you. No career in stand-up waiting for me. Great time to be a black actress or a black actor. Great time. Because everybody's very concerned about Black Lives Matter and all of that. The chewing noise you might be able to hear in the background is that little bollocks of a golden retriever. Eh? Yeah, it's a great time to be a black actor or actress. The new Batwoman, I don't really care, is going to be a black woman called Javicia Leslie. There she is. Great time to be black. You'd get a job as the Milky Bar Kid now if you're a black actor. Dolly Parton, the theatre show in the West End, could be a black woman. A lot of this going around at the moment. And I'm sure, of course, accordingly, people go bananas on Twitter. Conspiracy theorists are dangerous. We're dangerous. We represent a clear and present danger. Why am I saying we? I'm not a conspiracy theorist, am I? Am I? I make room for conspiracy theorists in my life. Everybody should have a conspiracy theorist in their life. Do you like me lamp, by the way? It's a lovely lamp, that. It's a lovely lamp. Bought it from a traveller named Blackie. Fell off the back of a lorry. Conspiracy extremists, conspiracy theories are dangerous, and they are exploiting the pandemic, and they are giving people bad ideas, and that could be very harmful for people. Now, for the third time this week, not the first, not the second, not the fourth, the third time, we're going to hear from James O'Brien. But this time we can see him, old James O'Brien there, on LBC Radio. This is him talking about 5G conspiracy theories and anti-vaxxers. Okay.
Reports today show that nearly one in six...
What have I done there?
And another similar number is still unsure about it. Now, I told you at the time, and I want to make this clear, I told you at the time that the strangest thing in the early days of this crisis for me were the messages I was getting from old mates, like people coming to me via Facebook who I haven't seen for 30 years, lads I was at school with who know that I'm in the media. So they thought, rightly or wrongly, that I might be able to give them a steer on stuff. Or a mate of mine who's a barber, who got in touch to say, I've been sent this thing on WhatsApp. Is it true about the 5G masts? So when I say I don't want to talk to you if you are in this category of people, then I don't want you to think that I'm sort of looking down on you. I just can't obviously use this platform to promote opinions or ideas that will kill other people listening. That's just my responsibility to you. That's human to human. Parent to parent, if you like. I can't do that. But I do care passionately about you and your safety and your family's health. And the fact that you have become an anti-vaxxer is terrifying and tragic. And I want to help you come out of that darkness. But I if I let you talk to me about it, then you might bend some ears of people listening. And that would be like conducting a proper debate about whether or not bleach cures coronavirus or the moon is made of cheese. I can't do that because someone might go away and drink bleach, you see. Even if you came on the radio and struggled to make valid rhetorical points against me, some people listening might still fall for it. The problem with the Facebook stuff, the problem with the internet, is that there is no dissenting voice there. So you read that a phone mast is going to give you a virus, and there's nothing on your other shoulder, is there? That's the bit I find scary. There's nothing on your other shoulder going, you know, come on. There's probably not much in this idea that phone masts are going to give you a fatal virus. So I love you. If I'm now describing you and you're very cross with me and very upset with me, you know that I love you and I care for you. But I can't talk to you today because it would be like talking to somebody who thinks drinking bleach can cure coronavirus. So I'm going to talk about you, and I hope we're going to do it affectionately. We're certainly going to try to do it respectfully. Okay?
He's lovely, isn't he, James? It isn't just LBC Radio. They're all at it. The BBC is at it as well. Channel 4, Sky News. Editorial staff are being told from on high not to be discussing these things with anybody. Take great care not to allow people phone in and express opinions about 5G or about vaccines, because the science on these things is settled. So no room for discussion. It could be harmful. It doesn't matter. O'Brien claims to be, you know, the world's greatest interrogator of people. Even though they wouldn't stand much of a chance with me, the fact is what they say might cause a fatality. It might cause somebody to lose their life. This is where it's all heading now. All of this happening at the same time. This really is a red letter year, this 2020, isn't it? Loads going on. I've prepared loads today. Lots and lots of stuff. Some interesting stuff to show you in a minute. You've been hearing about Melbourne, haven't you? And about how tower blocks in Melbourne have been sealed off on account of fears that there's been a large outbreak of coronavirus cases in these tower blocks. So they sent in around about 1,000 police officers. Not just police officers, 1,000 combined, I think, of police officers and military people as well, armed, stationed on every floor to make sure that people don't leave. These are the things that we might have seen in certain Hollywood films over the years, right? These are the scenes we would have seen, and they would have been pretty startling. And maybe somebody along the line said, wow, well, that'll never happen. Here's Sky News in Australia. I have no idea who the reporter is. It might show on the screen who she is. And this is her describing what's happening in Melbourne. This was recorded about 18 to 20 hours ago, but it's really incredible. It really speaks to where we are in 2020 and what's happening with this virus. Have a look at this. It's quite amazing, really.
More than 1,000 police officers and at least 260 Defence Force personnel will be patrolling the border of Greater Melbourne and the Mitchell Shire, ensuring people aren't flouting the stay-at-home orders and, most importantly, making sure that people from the city aren't travelling to the mostly coronavirus-free regions. Now, Victoria Police say that they'll be conducting random spot checks, they'll be checking vehicle registration, driver's licences, and those caught travelling without a valid reason will be turned away and they face fines of up to $1,600. Here's the Police Commissioner.
Sunday night, we had an Airbnb party in Southbank where 15 people thought it was okay to get together and party. We issued every one of them infringements because they just can't do it. Some people are still not listening, and if the only way we can get through to them to listen and do it here, the show directions, is through us giving out significant fines, that's what we'll do.
It has been an embarrassing start for Victoria Police. They've had to withdraw all 15 fines. As it turns out, those partygoers weren't doing the wrong thing. They were at a holiday home, and before lockdown, the rules were you could have up to 20 people in a holiday house. Now, that rule has since been withdrawn. Victoria Police say that their window of discretion is certainly getting smaller, and they will be out and about today.
You think that can't happen in a town near you? It's in Australia. It's the other side of the world. It's a Commonwealth country. It's a Commonwealth country. Leia, give over, will you? Just give over, eh? Just give me a half an hour, yeah? Right, okay. I'm not getting that half an hour. Right, if you're just tuning into this, I'm doing this because my day was completely messed up. And I'm minding the dog. I'm in the back room, as it were, with an eight-month-old lunatic golden retriever. Keeping an eye on her, hence not doing the radio show. But there's a lot to talk about, and I'll read some of your comments now in a moment as well. Nice to be doing this again, even though I've tired of this platform. Speaking of the virus, all of the UK media is running this today. They're going to test around about 20,000 people working in key jobs or jobs where they might be at greater risk of contracting the virus, even if they've never had any symptoms. Now, it's quite obvious to me why they're doing that. They're doing that because they want to find more cases of the virus to give them the excuse to impose more of these localized lockdowns as we go ahead, and also to give them the excuse to introduce mandatory wearing of masks outside your house. This is coming. I got a taxi for herself this morning to take her into town. Why didn't you drive her, you big baldy garmin? I had things to do, is the answer. Not that it's any of your business. And the message came through from the taxi. She asked to be wearing a mask in the car. Now, fair enough, we knew this. We were told this. But she's also not to say anything. And she's to open the window on her side in the back of the car. Those are the instructions. So I said to the very excited future Mrs. Allen, heading off to the hairdressers for the first time in months, looking like a crazy cat woman walking out the door. Not that I can feckin' talk about hair. All over the place. Can't wait. And I'm basically taking a big dump all over her excitement. You're not to open your mouth to the taxi driver, love. Don't say a word to him. And open the window on your side, you smelly. And that's what this is all about, this story there. Got to find more cases of people who are asymptomatic. So we want to tell perfectly healthy people, you're super spreaders. You're spreaders, even though you've not coughed, you've not sneezed, not so much as a tickle there. But you're dangerous. We know you are now. lots of you here in one area so we can close down here. And of course, the introduction of mandatory wearing of masks outside the house. You heard them yesterday on Sky News and the BBC, so-called experts saying that not wearing a mask should be seen as something as antisocial as having a few beers and getting behind the wheel of a car. Unbelievable! And I don't have to tell you, and I'm not going to bring up the studies, because even Google itself cannot hide the peer-reviewed studies, of which they are legion. Ones that claim that wearing a mask is as useless as tits on a bull. Useless masks. But I've also been spinning these yarns now about microscopic droplets transmitting through the air, this virus. They're just making it up as they go along. The lies are extraordinary. You think you can't be surprised? You think I've heard all the bullshit that I could ever hear? Nothing will surprise me. And then you're surprised again. Right? Let's look at one or two more of the newspapers. The economic impact of this is obviously going to be, it's going to be severe, maybe. And maybe there isn't a word in the English language that will that could describe how bad it's going to be for people. Everybody going with some aspect of the economic fallout this morning. Comedy venues, according to The Guardian, 77% of them face closure within a year. Now, Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, and Boris Johnson have said there will be a 1.75 or £2 billion rescue package for the arts. But it won't be nearly enough. And owners of comedy venues are saying, we're not even sure if we're going to get anything out of that. Comedy venues. Bit of stand-up comedy. Theatre and comedy and music are basically soul food, aren't they? Vital for our well-being and our happiness. They've been destroyed by this lockdown. Nobody can fathom, nobody has been able to put a figure on the amount of jobs to be lost in that sector alone. Comedy venues. The comedy's been under attack anyway, hasn't it? By cultural Marxism and political correctness. Comedians now crying and apologising for stuff they did 20 years ago and promising never again to take the piss out of anybody lest they be really hurt by what has been said. Mad times we live in, folks. We live in mad times. How you doing, by the way? The BBG? Here's the BBC, funnily enough. Taxpayers face day of reckoning, according to the Institute for Fiscal Studies. The cost of the economic support measures had risen to £190 billion. I think that's even being a bit conservative, no pun intended. And it will have to be paid back. Until yesterday, the so-called Socialist Labour Party, which is about as socialist, by the way, as Genghis Khan, we're calling for a wealth tax. Yeah. And their idiotic supporters imagine that the wealth tax will be imposed on Starbucks and Richard Branson and Facebook. But of course it fucking won't. It'll be imposed on your meagre savings and mine. Did you know that 25% of people in this country don't even have so much as £100? In reserve capital. Did you know that? That's a fact, by the way. That's how people get screwed on a daily basis. And these lunatic momentum people, yeah, impose a wealth tax, yeah, stick it to Amazon. Like they're going to fucking stick it to Amazon. Huh? When have they ever been sticking it to Amazon? They'll be sticking it to you and me. That's how it works. Economic fallout. BBC there. Ah, Jesus, huh? Leicester. Fucked. Leicester was given the a localized lockdown. And it's going to remain in lockdown until the end of next. What are you eating over there? Come here. Come here, I said. Give it to me. Give it to me. Sorry about that. Leicester wasn't released from lockdown. Well, nobody was, really. No city was, really. And it's going to stay in lockdown until, does it say there? Does it say there? Next week, is it? And calls have been made to give Leicester more money for the businesses there for the inconvenience of the extra lockdown. Businesses going to the wall. Go on to the BBC, go to the business page. Go to the Guardian business page. It's free. Go to the Telegraph business page. Today, tens of thousands of more job losses were announced today. Every effing day. Talk about a health impact of a virus that's harmless to the vast, vast majority of people in the world. And they talk about the health impacts of a relatively harmless virus. What about the health impacts of people who have less than £100 in the bank now being told you're fired? Not fired, really. They fucked me over. The business is on the rocks. I've got to let you go. And of course, you're renting from a private landlord. What are you going to do? You're going to end up on the street. Is where you're going to end up. You're talking about mental health crisis? About an NHS crisis? You kidding me? Crazy. The Mirror today. Decades to pay off the debt. UK faces deepest recession in history. Not one single journalist has had the decency or the integrity to ask the Chancellor of the Exchequer, why should the banks make anything on the back of this crisis? Why can't the banks loan the money sans interest? Now, we know about banking. You and I know more about banking than 99.99999% of people in the world. We know that banking is gangsterism on steroids. It's the greatest hoax, the greatest fraud in human history. We know that. But let's play along for a minute. Let's pretend that banking is legitimate. Why don't they say, why don't the banks give us this money without interest? They'll get it back, but it'll help us all out a bit more if they don't charge interest on it. Right? Crazy shit, right? Right? Jesus Christ. Come on up then. Come on. Come on. Come over here. Come here. Blondie. There she is. There she is. Say hello, Blondie. Say hello, Blondie. Say hello, Blondie. Good girl, huh? Yeah. 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 Right. Where were we? Do you want to hear Nicola Sturgeon, Jimmy Cranky? Let's get a bit of Jimmy Cranky going there. She addressed the Scottish Parliament this afternoon. And she talked about the next phase of reopening Scotland. And, well, she talked about going back to Mass. I love a good Mass, me. There's a lot to be said for saying a good Mass. Here's Nicola Sturgeon. And this is what she's suggesting. Attending Sunday worship. How she's portraying it. This is just tyranny. The voice must go up several octaves to convey your shock. Tyranny! It's tyranny, I tell you! Have a listen to this. Jesus wept.
And from tomorrow, limited indoor gatherings will also be permitted. A maximum of 8 people from up to 3 different households can meet indoors. To be clear, that is the household whose house the gathering is in and people from up to 2 additional households. Further important changes will then come into force from Wednesday next week, that is the 15th of July. From that date, indoor restaurants, cafes and pubs will be able to reopen. However, just as with indoor household meetings, opening up indoor hospitality poses significantly increased risks of transmission. So it is absolutely essential that the guidance on health and safety is followed rigorously by businesses, by staff and by customers. We have decided that from the 15th of July, places of worship can reopen for communal prayer, congregational services and contemplation. However, numbers will be strictly limited. 2 metres physical distancing will be required, and there will also be a requirement to collect the contact details and time of attendance of those entering a place of worship. And unfortunately, given what we know of transmission risks, singing and chanting will also be restricted. This is undoubtedly a time for cautious hope and optimism. There is no doubt that Scotland, through our collective efforts, has made great progress in tackling COVID. We should all savour our first indoor meetings and meals with friends, our first pint in a pub, or catch up over coffee. Many of us, I know, are looking forward to our first non-amateur haircut in many months.
Did you hear her describing what worship would be like, what going to mass would be like? No singing. She went on to repeat something she said the other day. She went on to say, if you're out and about now in Scotland, in the Highlands, if you're out and about in the Lowlands, in Glasgow, in Dumbarton, if you're out and about in Aberdeen, and if it feels normal to you, she said, there's something wrong. That ginger bastard belongs on the end of a pencil. Nobody's standing up to it. Nobody. Christ. Shall I say a few hellos? It's 26 minutes past four, by the way. The comments are coming in so quick. I can't really scroll back up and say a few hellos. They're coming in very quick there, the comments, you know. So I'll say a few hello very quickly. Hi, Jennifer Garcia. Hi, Josh Ratcliffe. Hi, Rose. How you doing, Rose? That's Rose Renouf. How you doing, Rose? We've got Rose Resnor, who's in Los Angeles, who's got a four-month-old German Shepherd. How you doing, Rose? That's mayhem, eh? This is mayhem here, and she's 8 months, the little fecker. Hi to Dave Kohler. Job loss is part of the plan. It definitely is. David Icke went to see The Hunger Games in the cinema. He came back and he phoned me and he said, this is what it's going to be, The Hunger Games Society. Hi to Neil Dennis. Hi to Mark. Oh, there's a lot of people there chatting amongst yourselves there. So I'll tell you what, I'll just forego the old niceties there. Not that I don't want to read you. Yeah. Lovely. Comments coming in thick and fast. Michael Billington. Lucy Jane, how you doing, Lucy? For those of you who didn't understand the term BBG, now you get a glimpse. People who are new to the programme, they're always asking the radio show, what does BBG mean? Well, now you know. Big, bold, and gammon-esque. Gammon-esque. Hi to Textonic, who's in County Clare, in Ireland. Munster man or Munster woman. Hi to Michelle Gorolini. How you doing, Michelle? It's a good name. Lovely jubbly. David says, why is Richie at the funeral parlour? This is my conservatory. We're very posh. Caroline's a bit like Hyacinth Bouquet. We've got a conservatory. Yeah. I wouldn't mind a night out with Johnny Depp, I was thinking. My mate Spiro now. We'll be all over this. Spiro will know that Johnny Depp and Shane McGowan are great mates. It must be marvellous going out for a few drinks with Johnny Depp. He's suing the Sun for libel because they said that he's a wife beater. And she said, I'm not. She's a husband beater, Amber Heard. It sounds like, I said this yesterday, it's a very funny story to watch, to follow as somebody who's interested in libel. The guy had his finger severed in a row with Amber Heard. And he took his severed finger. The court has heard today. And he began to paint with it. On doors and on a window. What must nights out with Johnny Depp be like? There is a Depp story, isn't there, in the papers today that made me laugh. But her cheating on him with his friends, her beating him up, and behaving pretty badly didn't bother him. It is when she defecated in his bed, in the marital bed, that's when he decided to throw her out or to divorce her. She doesn't deny this, Amber Heard. She accepts that she took a big dump in his bed, and she said she did it for a joke. She didn't even use the excuse that came to my mind straight away. I went down the joke shop and I bought some poo in a can. No, no, she just fessed right up. She fessed right up. Yeah, yeah, pooed in his bed, yeah. Yeah, yeah, and Johnny Depp. Ah, it's fantastic. I don't think he's going to win this libel case against the Sun. It's going to be fairly costly to him. A pint of whiskey and four lines of cocaine for lunch. Irish people are like, and? Well, where's the problem? Pint of whiskey, where's the problem? The cocaine I don't have much time for, but it's a pretty ordinary working lunch, that. Right, let's get rid of Johnny Depp. The virus. This is in the Times. Europe views UK tourists as pariahs. Yeah. We have a reputation on the continent as playing fast and loose with social distancing. On the continent, they think we're a bunch of feckless, reckless rogues. By us, I mean people who live in the UK. Because I ain't no Brit. I'm Irish, but I live here. I'm part of the collective. They think we're a bunch of reckless boozing, COVID rule flaunting, selfish bastards is what we are. They think that our attitude is, have a good time and kill a granny. It's my attitude. The parents of Harry Dunn that was knocked down by that fucking idiot, Anne Sokoulis, that CIA dipstick, who managed to get out of the country by convincing people that she had diplomatic immunity when she didn't. She was driving on the wrong side of the road. Most Americans you meet are as sick. No, I'm not going to go down that road. No, no. I have too many American listeners. I was going to do a few Americans are as thick as jokes, but I won't. I'll save them. Anyway, she killed him. She pissed off. One of the most bizarre things that happened in the last 12 months, pure vaudeville, was Donald Trump invited Harry Dunn's parents to the Oval Office. And amazingly, he turned into Cilla Black. He said to the parents of Harry Dunn, you might remember this, he said, well, tonight we've flown her in specially for you. Anne Sokoulis is in the next room if you want to say hello. And the parents said, what? Yeah, she's in the next room. We flew her in because I'm a great president. Anyway, the family won't get any justice. But a bizarre story was in the press today. Do you want to see it? A bizarre story. Some of Harry Dunn's friends might be thinking today that they are living through their own Final Destination sequel. Do you remember the Final Destination films? The first one was very good, very clever. And then they got away with repeating the same fucking scenario in Destination 2, 3, 4, 5, 17 and 18. So, you cheat death. Or you think you do? No. How did Destination go? He was on a plane and the plane goes down and then he woke up in the airport. Yes. And he decided not to get on the plane and the plane crashed. Therefore, his dream was a premonition. But then he was being stalked by death because he was meant to be on the plane. There we are. I'll never get a job as a film critic. So Harry Dunn killed by Anne Sokoulis, a fucking idiot driving on the wrong side of the road. His friends might think they're in their own Final Destination. Because his mates were nearly killed by an American car driving on the wrong side of the road. So for our American viewers who are living in the UK, it's fairly fucking straightforward. We drive on the left-hand side of the fucking road. When you get into the car, before you get into the car, plaster a little post-it note on the dashboard that says, stay on the left-hand side of the fucking road. It couldn't be any more simple, right? Right. Sick as pig shit. Unbelievable. Gotta love Dr. Marcus de Bruin, who's been on the Richie Allen radio show. If you wear the mask now, you won't be able to take it off until the vaccine arrives. Let's be honest, Luke, the mask is a euphemism for and wait till the vaccine gets here. That's exactly right. And in the next couple of weeks, they're going to tell you and me in Blighty, can't go outside without wearing a mask. And if you're seen outside without wearing the mask, you can be subject to a fixed penalty notice. You can be fined like that. Until when, officer? Until we have a vaccine. Yeah. Yeah. Fucking hell, huh? Jimmy Cranky, huh? Go back to mask, but don't sing any hymns and shut up. Text message to me this morning, huh? Tell your missus when she gets into the car not to open her fucking mouth. Japan. Get on the roller coaster if you like, but don't open your mouth. Keep your screams inside. This is a director from the Japanese Health Ministry. A genuine one. Listen, go and have fun now. Get on that ghost train. But when that dipstick who hides in the ghost train and gets paid £2 a fucking hour to grab you by the shoulder, don't scream or you might be fined. The louder you scream, the faster the ride. Not anymore. What will Blackpool Pleasure Beach be like this August, eh? Eh? Can you imagine it? Standing there. And you can see the fucking things going around. 22 loop-de-loops. One after another. But you can't hear a thing. Look at those people there. They're brave as anything. Nope. They've just been told to shut up. Shut up. Because it's a mad world. Fat people are being picked on. We're being told every day, we're being told every second of every day that a second wave is guaranteed. A second wave of the virus. And now they're telling people who are obese or overweight, get in shape. Because when you're heavy, you're more vulnerable to the virus. X to the power of 2 minus Y brackets BZW. The equation is, if you're heavy, you are more likely to get the infection. Therefore, you're a danger to everybody else. Honest to God, you think you're in tyranny now? This is just the fucking beginning. Here we go. You ready? It's everywhere today. It's everywhere. Feast your eyes. It's in the Daily Mail as well. The Times, the more centre-left Times, or centre-right, depending on which article you read, and the allegedly right-wing Daily Mail. Lose some weight. To help the NHS. Imagine when social crediting comes in. Being overweight will be listed as an antisocial behaviour. And I'm not virtue signalling for our chubby chums. I'm not trying to gain favour with our chubby chums. But there are 500,000 fucking reasons why people carry a bit of extra poundage. It's not necessarily because they're lazy arses. It's all coming down the line, this. Every fucking novel that you read in bed at 11 o'clock in the night time, and you were like, oh, fucking hell. Imagine a world like that, eh? You're here. You're on the outside. You're just outside the door now, about to walk through it. Yeah. Bad habits. Social credit score is low. Why? I'm a few pounds overweight. Do you remember Stephen King wrote a short story called Quitter's Ink, which was part of a film called Cat's Eye? Cat's Eye, was it three or four stories, like The Twilight Zone, all in one? James Wood signs up to quit smoking with an organization which guarantees that they will get him to quit no matter what. And then they start doing things like kidnapping his wife when they catch him having a cigarette, and eventually they electrocute his wife without killing her, and then eventually they tell him if he doesn't stop, they'll kill him. Science fiction from Stephen King. It was actually an old mafia don was running the agency. But you can, that fits with where we're going. Yeah. A couple of pounds overweight. Your privileges are stopped until you lose the weight. We've determined, Mr. Allen, that your body mass index should be this score. And until it gets there, well, you won't be going anywhere, you know? Jesus. This made me laugh today. This'll make you laugh. Got another 10 or 15 minutes. Is that okay about you? It is. It is? Okay. Eh? By the way, I weigh 14 stone flat. Actually, 13 stone 12. It's 14 stone in the afternoon, and it's 13 stone 12 in the morning. 196 pounds, basically. I'm in very good shape compared to where I was when I was having the life of Riley in Spain. Who's this fucking Riley, anyway? But yeah, I was having the life of Riley, yeah. I see Nathan Maverick, formerly of the Sex Pistols Experience, is in the building. How you doing, Nathan? Good to hear from you. Yeah. Yeah, here's something else for you now. Oh. Scientists in Texas, where ordinarily you only find steers and queers, but scientists in Texas have put together a list of things that we would do ordinarily, day-to-day things that we would do. Go to the park, go to the gym, go to the pub, go to work. And scientists in Texas have been very helpful in putting together a list of the things that could kill us. Think I'm joking? There it is. Number of media outlets went with this today. I hope this isn't sounding too bad now. There isn't an external microphone. I'm using the laptop microphone. Still no sign of the future, Mrs. A. Won't be home till about 8 o'clock, she said. Then she texted me about an hour ago and said, I might make it by 4:30. It's at 4:44 now. So it justifies me doing this today instead of the radio show, which will return on Sunday morning at 11. Look at that. Look at that. Ranking the riskiness of everyday activities. This, of course, is about constantly hammering away at people to get them into a perpetual state of fear. Of fear. Terrified. This is like the terror alertness chart, basically. You'll eventually get to a place where people will be looking at this stuff. What are you doing, Tommy? I'm going to the playground with the kids. What does it say on the chart? What does it say on the chart? It's a good question. Here's the chart. Yeah. Swimming in a public pool carries a moderate risk. Moderate. Does moderate mean acceptable, I wonder? Eating at a buffet is a high risk. Chinese restaurateurs in Madchester, they won't be too happy to see that. Going to the movies, high risk. Going to a sports stadium, high risk. Going to a bar. Attending a religious service with more than 500 worshippers is a high risk. There won't be any return to stadiums or to live music venues anytime soon. I don't believe. We're living in a tyranny. And I despair. Because apart from people going on Twitter and bleating about it, mea culpa, nobody's doing anything about it. Nobody's doing anything about it. Somewhere in Eastern Europe, they stormed Parliament. Was it Serbia? I was watching RT the other day. In Serbia, ordinary folks, upon hearing that the lockdown would be extended or that more lockdown measures would be introduced, they stormed the effing Parliament. Good. No violence now. No hitting anybody. Don't put your hands on anybody. But that's what we have to do eventually, isn't it? Ultimately, we know the only way out of it is for millions of us, legion, to go down there and say, listen, get the fuck out. Get out and be gone. Because a lot of people fear that because they fear that out of that will come your Tommy the Tit Robinson and his thuggish, violent, thick-headed fucking mates. Maybe they're right to fear that. I don't know. What will fill the vacuum when you get rid of them and burn their fucking palaces down after they've left? Or move into them. What happens then? Does anarchy reign? Do you end up with the alternate 1985 in Back to the Future 2 with Biff Tannen's paradise? Do you end up with that sort of a world? I don't know. I can't say no for certain. I can't say yes. I don't know. Mad. Mad. Keir Starmer, the leader of the Labour Party, who replaced Jeremy Corbyn, is, he's a bit of a fuckwit. And he has agreed that he should have unconscious bias training. He was on LBC Radio. I'm not going to play you the clip. He was on LBC Radio. Woman called Sharon rang in, black lady, and said, didn't like what you said about Black Lives Matter. Would you submit yourself for unconscious bias training? Keir said, of course. He wanted to tell Sharon to fuck off. But he was live on the radio. And you don't become prime minister by being honest. Sharon, did you suggest I take unconscious bias training? Fuck off, Sharon. But he didn't. He said I would do it. Nick Ferrari said, how long does it last? He said 3 hours. Turns out he was lying. This is in all the papers again today. It's 20 minutes online to rid yourself of your unconscious bias. You might be running a team in your office, and without realizing it, you might be predisposed to giving the minority person the more menial tasks because of your unconscious bias. This is bullshit. There's no evidence to support any of this, right? But we're in the times we're in. And I got a bit of a giggle today. It's very easy to find a provider of an unconscious bias course. They're everywhere. They're all over the place. They're everywhere. Unconscious bias. There's one company doing it. 25 quid plus VAT. Become a better person and a better leader. Divest yourself. Expunge yourself of your unconscious bias against things and against people. Ah, well. Be Jesus. What are you going to do, eh? What are you going to do? A couple of more things, and I'll be gone then in a minute. Sky News has got a US-based reporter called Alex Crawford. Did you see this? She was wearing a mask. She'd been to a rodeo. Possibly in the south. Although, Calgary, I'm well aware of it. So she was at a rodeo, and she was accosted by a woman, sans mask, for wearing a mask. So a woman went up to the Sky News reporter and started giving her a load of shit for wearing a mask. And I thought the woman, while a little bit hysterical, was also very articulate in expressing why she fears the masks. Very good.
But some resent any action to curtail the disease, even taking issue with those like us for wearing masks.
Aren't you guys hot?
Totally.
Come on, 80 degrees.
You're reducing your oxygen content. When you pass out, don't ask me for help because I'm not going to
control all of us and have us living in fear and thinking that you're contaminated. It is false narrative. And when you wear a mask, which you can certainly do, you are further pushing the agenda that is condemning all of us and keeps us living in a state of terror.
She's not alone in those views. And with record numbers of infections and hospitalizations in several southern states, celebrations like this one may lead to yet another surge. Alex Crawford, Sky News, Texas.
Good, eh? Good for her. I thought she articulated that very well. Natalie Stacey, who presents a metal show live on TriggerWarning.tv every Tuesday at 7 o'clock. How you doing, Natalie? Says, my company is enforcing diversity training. I followed my manager to this job. He's Ghanaian. My fiancé is Hungarian. And if they start with that stuff, I'm going to walk out, I think she says there. Wow. Wow. Mad. Mad. Unconscious bias, huh? What else is there? I have one or two other little things for you before we bid each other adieu. So here we are now. People are calling for, politicians are increasingly calling for a universal or global approach to dealing with the virus. Today, Sky News had interviews with American legal eagles, lawyers and academics who teach the law, talking about Trump defunding the World Health Organization and how that might be illegal and that he shouldn't have acted on his own and that maybe he needed congressional support. And we're going to have to accept that there will have to be a one-size-fits-all approach to the virus. This is the tyranny. And it'll have to be the World Health Organization instructing your countries. And I want to play you, before I go today, a bit of a video. I won't waste time telling you about the Council on Foreign Relations being a roundtable group, being part of Rockefeller efforts to basically take control of governmental policy. That's how it works. Look up the roundtable groups, look up the Rockefeller Foundation. You'll see what it is and what it does. Donald Trump and Boris Johnson and Emmanuel Macron have never made a decision in their lives. They are not in charge of anything. They do what they are told. That's a fact. It's not conjecture. So 3 years ago, Richard Haass, I used to play this clip as an audio clip on the radio show, but I'm going to play the video clip. I was editing away today. I figured out how to use a bit of editing software. It's very handy. And I was able to edit some clips for this garbage live stream today. So this guy, Richard Haass, the chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations, still is, 3 years ago, gave a speech about World Order 2.0. And in it, he does briefly talk about pandemics And he explains why now more than ever, countries cannot be allowed to act in their own interests. Basically, sovereignty. Well, it's a myth. Right? Here's Richard Haass. Please listen carefully to everything he says.
We need to think about order very differently in the 21st century. And for the last few hundred years, order was premised on a very simple idea. Big idea, and an innovation when it came up in the 17th century. But it's the idea that this is a world of nation states, and that the organizing principle, the ordering principle, will be sovereignty. And essentially, states will not use force to change borders of other states, and states will respect the borders of others, not just physically, but they'll respect it in a larger sense. They won't be interfering. They'll essentially leave what happens within other states to that country alone. It's kind of live and let live, hands off reality. And that was a big idea when it came around in the mid-17th century. It was obviously violated over the next 300 plus years, but it's still a good idea. Saddam Hussein violated it when he went into Kuwait. It was a costly decision. And again, Russia violated it more recently. And we don't want to have a world where this is violated regularly. My argument in the book is that's all good, it's still necessary, but it's no longer sufficient. That if you live in a world of globalization, to make a long story short, nothing stays local for long. If you have computer hackers on your territory, they can cause mischief or worse all over the world. If you have a poultry farm that has unsanitary conditions, certain types of diseases can break out, human transmission, it can cause a global pandemic. If you're India and you decide that your economy forces you to generate a lot more electricity, and the easiest way to do it is through coal, this will have climate change consequences for everyone else in the world, in addition to whatever environmental consequences it may have for you. As we learned on 9/11, a few blocks from here, if a government allows, or one way or another, through choice or weakness, terrorists operate out of its territory, those terrorists can cause havoc halfway around the world. As we saw in Syria, if you have massive flows of refugees, it can destabilize other parts of the world, as we're now seeing in Europe. So my argument is simply, while we need to respect sovereignty and not, again, bring about a world where invasion is commonplace, we also now need to build on it. And my idea is that sovereign entities need to have the obligation to make sure that nothing is allowed to go on within their territorial limits that has adverse consequences for anybody else. In return, nothing will go on in anyone else's territorial limits that would have adverse consequences for us. And what we want to do is set up these rules through consultations and negotiations. Here's what every sovereign entity, including the United States, is obligated to do. And we'd agree to the set of behaviors and rules or norms. And then we'd also agree, how do we incentivize countries to live up to it? How do we give them capacity, if they lack it, to live up to it? How do we penalize or deal with those who violate it? And I call this World Order 2.0, but I think this is an operating system for a world in which globalization, not just great power conflict, is the principal dynamic. It's not wrong, it's just no longer adequate. We need to think about international relations in a way that's not 19th century geopolitics. We need to think about it in terms of 21st century.
If we don't like what you're doing in your country, we will sanction you back to the Stone Age, or we will undermine your government by feeding an uprising there, an Arab Spring or whatever, or we'll invade you. And we won't even be backwards in coming forwards with that. We'll be fairly upfront about it. This is World Order 2.0. You heard the bit about pandemics, right? Yeah. That was in 2017. I've been playing that clip for people because it's very educational. Rockefeller Foundation. Harry Vox, look him up, he was on the radio show, found that document back in 2014 from 2010. He found the Rockefeller Foundation 2010 document where they imagined the pandemic. And then they suggested, well, pretty much everything that has been enforced in this so-called real pandemic. It's crazy stuff, this, you know. It's all there for people. It's all there, all the evidence that anybody would ever need. And I'm going to finish with this. It's exactly 5 o'clock now. I know a lot of people will be trying to tune into the radio program. They wouldn't have gotten the messages earlier on. I apologize again for that. But I've enjoyed this hour. I certainly put quite a bit of work into it this afternoon. So I hope you've enjoyed it as well. I really appreciate your company. We'll leave on a lighter note. On a lighter note. This was in all the papers today. There is football. There is soccer going on. But it is, of course, going on behind closed doors. No fans. And they are spraying the footballs with detergent, and they are spraying the corner flags with detergent, and they are using 3 coaches per team to travel to away stadiums. Greta Thunberg must be shitting her nappy at that sort of information. But this made me laugh. And I'm not a cruel person. I never have been. And I'm not sizist. I never have been. But Wycombe Wanderers, they've got a player called Adebayo Akinfenwa. Here he is. And he's been complaining about racism today. Now he has been. Because somebody from Fleetwood Town FC, please be Joey Barton, please be Joey Barton, called him a fat water buffalo. Which is a bit unkind. It's also very, very, very kind of unacademic. It's very, well, crass. Doesn't show much of an intellect, does it? To have a go at a guy's size. Cue some of my listeners now digging out millions of clips where I refer to the characteristics of people like Nicola Sturgeon and Jeremy Corbyn. I know I'm a big hypocrite, I know. Anyway, but I don't do it to their face. So this guy is, he's up in arms about it. And he said, what did he say again? Let's bring it up. He said, historically, I have been subjected to and have experienced abuse across a number of areas and about many things, including my size, but also the colour of my skin. I've had to deal with racial abuse, overt racism, as well as covert racism. And he goes on to talk about Lithuania. And he eventually goes on to say that being called a fat water buffalo is just another example of racism. No. The guy was trying to, no pun intended, get under your skin. By referring to your appearance, by referring to your rather rotund countenance. Adebayo, yeah. Where's it all going to end? Where's it all going to end? What happened to sticks and stones may break my bones, all the rest of it. Now, I'm going to take my leave of you. I'll be back with you on Sunday morning at 11 o'clock UK time, where we will obviously look through the papers as usual, and we'll hear from the usual politicos, and we'll drop in on Mar and on Ridge and everything else. So have a great weekend. Don't forget that at 10 o'clock tonight, Hayden Hewitt and Graham Booth will be on Trigger Warning channel on YouTube, which is youtube.com/TriggerWarningTV. And they'll be given their own unique take on these geopolitical events, and they're always worth listening to, so check them out. That's Hayden Hewitt, speaking with Hayden today. Alrighty, so to people whose names I didn't mention, as you can see there were a lot of comments coming in. There are more people on the stream than I thought might be, but Spiro is there. How you doing, Spiro? Just seeing him there. Do pay attention to activist posts, by the way, and Spiro's Skouras. Spiro's YouTube channel, if you haven't subscribed to it, subscribe to it now. It's very well followed, and it's packed with really good reporting. You know how much I think of Spiro. So that's it then. Sorry for not doing the radio show in full today, but I did me best for you, right? And thankfully, the future Mrs. Allen didn't arrive in at 4:30, which would have negated the very reasons for doing this. The future, Mrs. Allen. Yeah. 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 I do love this, but I know you've seen this. I know you've seen it, but I love it. Should we begin from now on every broadcast? What is it now? Day six since Jizz Lane was apprehended. We should open every show, Spiro. What do you reckon, Spiro? Day seven. And as far as we know, Jizz Lane is still with us. God love her. Jizz Lane, yeah. Mm. Yeah. She's going to name names, huh? If she names any names, there'll be people you've never heard of. Is my guess. Right, the Richie Allen radio shows that you might have missed, they're on Podomatic.com, iTunes, Spotify, they're on YouTube for now. If you missed any of them, we'll talk again on Sunday. Thanks for your company and for your attention this afternoon. I hope it hasn't been too dull. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Bye. Bye. Right, the Richie Allen radio shows that you might have missed, they're on Podomatic.com, iTunes, Spotify, they're on YouTube for now. If you missed any of them, we'll talk again on Sunday. Thanks for your company and for your attention.